You're with SBS Radio.
Welcome to NITV Radio, Matthew Karakalakis from AMK Law.
Fantastic to be here, Kerry Lee. It's a real pleasure sharing this episode 13 with you and our listeners. I'd first like to give our acknowledgement to the traditional owners of the land, the Boonwurrung and Warrawong Wurundjeri peoples of the Kulin Nation, and pay respect to their elders past, present and future.
Now episode 13 of Tell Me Law, and today's topic is black cladding. What is black cladding in the context of Indigenous business?
Well, black cladding is essentially the advantage taken to the detriment of an Indigenous business or Indigenous business person as a result of a business structure that's been set up. So Supply Nation considers black cladding as being the practice of having a non-Indigenous business essentially taking advantage of the Indigenous business or its individual. And the real issue with black cladding is that the unfair advantage is really being taken care of to the detriment of Indigenous peoples and or their businesses, which really is not a good thing at all.
How does black cladding adversely affect our Indigenous communities across Australia?
Well, if we look at the whole focus of the Indigenous procurement policy, which is essentially growing through the Closing the Gap initiatives and the focus of growing closer and narrowing the margin that unfortunately disadvantages our Indigenous community, black cladding really means that the significant long-standing or even controlling majority in our community takes advantage of our Indigenous peoples and their businesses. So it means that, number one, further advantage is being taken from our peoples. Number two is that the focus of Closing the Gap and that initiative and the policy surrounding Closing the Gap aren't achieved, and the focus of the Indigenous procurement policy itself as it was introduced in 2015 to support the growth of Indigenous enterprise, that's not achieved either. So black cladding has a real significant adverse effect on our Indigenous community and our businesses.
I'm wondering, where does black cladding most commonly arise, Matthew?
Black cladding mostly arises where you have a joint venture type setup. Joint venture being a Indigenous business or person coming together, forming an entity with a non-Indigenous business or person. And essentially, it's where in that setting up, the larger company, the we'll call it the white company or the white person, wants to benefit from the Indigenous business and take those opportunities that exist for Indigenous businesses without giving that Indigenous person or the Indigenous business the capacity or capability training, no day-to-day control and no real stake in the business overall. That's the most common scenario in which black cladding arises.
What is currently being done to help prevent against black cladding in our communities?
Well, there's been some good changes. I think, number one, some of the awareness that is going into the marketplace about black cladding helps to educate our Indigenous peoples. There's also steps that can be taken now whereby if there's black cladding occurring, that can be reported to bodies like Supply Nation, Kinaway, the New South Wales Indigenous Chamber of Commerce. There's also a process in place now where joint venture entities are actually monitored and audited by Supply Nation. So they are held accountable in terms of particular reporting requirements. Also, in order for an Indigenous joint venture to be able to register with Supply Nation, there's a more thorough process that's being looked into, assessed and implemented, which has come into place since the beginning of January 19. And that includes the joint venture having in place a strategy so that there's proper capability of the Indigenous business partner, you know, the Indigenous business person or the Indigenous business itself actually being involved in that capability strategy. There's also a requirement for the Indigenous workforce to be a part of the overall vision for that joint venture entity. So these are some of the things that are currently being done to try and help prevent against black cladding.
What are some changes that could be made to protect against black cladding?
Kerrilee, there's real changes that do need to be made, and I think a lot of these changes are around the education component. So, for example, if Indigenous peoples and their businesses understand the true value in which their cultural significance, their business abilities and what they actually bring into the business and commercial sector is known, I think that then they can be placed in a better negotiating position. It's really, really important that Indigenous peoples have proper control in the business. There's a real need to ensure that the skill set and experience of Indigenous peoples are being properly recognised, addressed and developed. As a lawyer, I see it an integral requirement to ensure that when these joint venture structures are set up, there's a strong constitution and shareholders agreement that's in place to really protect the rights of our Indigenous business owners. We covered an episode recently on shareholders agreements, so some of the things that we discussed there I think are really important for our Indigenous peoples to be considering. There was also, I came across a paper that Deloitte had written, and they made some recommendations about the changes that can be made to protect against black cladding. And I think overall there's some really good recommendations, so I encourage everybody to read those.
What were some of the recommendations, Matthew?
Yeah, so some of the recommendations were, so for example, one of those was having the Indigenous ownership definition being amended so that there's at least 50% ownership as well as 50% Indigenous control of the company. So for example, at this stage, there's only the requirement that an Indigenous business have 50% or more ownership by an Indigenous person or people and or their corporations that they own. But what this is really looking at is ensuring that there's at least 50% of control in the company as well. And I think that control component is a very, very big piece to this puzzle to safeguard against black cladding. There's other components that Deloitte may, perhaps sometime in the future we can have a guest from Deloitte to speak about some of these on our program. I think that might be a good idea. One of the other things that could be very, very helpful would be having a ready-made package of, you know, advice documents and checklist materials that could even be developed to assist Indigenous businesses in the setting up stages of Indigenous joint venture companies to protect against the black cladding. There's also, I think, the requirement that there's proper due diligence that needs to take place by the Indigenous peoples and their businesses before entering into a joint venture structure. So getting that proper level of legal advice at the setup stages, and then also ensuring that the Indigenous people have access to proper legal advice throughout the life cycle of the joint venture entity. So for example, if there's ever a dispute that arises, it's very important that an Indigenous person understands their rights straight away so that they can be acted upon, and then their control as well as their legal interests can be protected and enhanced through the joint venture structure overall.
Thanks for your time today, Matthew. Is there any inspirational words you'd like to leave with our listeners today?
Absolutely. I'd love to share a quote that I came across online by Tom Dystra, and the quote goes like this. We cultivated our land, but in a way different from the white man. We endeavoured to live with the land. They seemed to live off it. I was taught to preserve, never to destroy.
Beautiful words of wisdom to finish off with. Matthew Karakalakis from AMK Law, thanks for your time today on NITV Radio.
Want to hear more stories like this? Listen on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.